Well, good evening and welcome to the first regularly scheduled meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission. Tonight is Tuesday, January 15th, 2019. So remember that when you write on your checks. So we're at the Veterans Memorial Building at 209 Surf Street. And come down. Great. So Michael rolled in just on time here. And so we're ready to, we've got a full complement. And so we've got a quorum. So I'll call the meeting to order. Could we please have a moment of silence to begin the meeting, please? Thank you very much. Next, we'll have the Pledge of Allegiance, so please stand, face the flag, and ready, begin. Okay, do we have any planning commissioner announcements? Anybody want to? Okay. I'd just like to bring up that we've got a major storm coming in. So if there's just, you know, be aware if you're in a flood prone region, just take precautions and listen up to the weather. Scott, do we have any city conditions or anything that are going to be critical?
We haven't issued any statement as it relates to the pending storm. As things, if that were to change, we'd probably post them on our website and that type of thing, push them out through Facebook and notify me. So,
okay, yeah. Great. Okay, Mike.
I just wanted to say thank you to the Coast Guard and anyone else who's helping throughout the shutdown to keep us safe.
Yeah, great. So this is the time we set aside for public comment period. This is typically reserved for items that are not on the agenda. If you could please come forward, you'll have 3 minutes. Please state your name and state your case.
I'm Jeff Heller. I'm here as a private citizen tonight. I wanted to thank the five commissioners for all the time that you put in at your position. I know you have got hundreds of hours, if not thousands of hours, that you put in every year. I want you to know I greatly appreciate it. I heard through the grapevine that at least one of you is not going to be reapplying for the position. So I wanted to congratulate that commissioner for all that he's done for the commission for many years. It's an outspoken voice, probably has a lot to do with the new civil discourse resolution that's been passed by the council. I'd like to congratulate Commissioner Sadowski. And wish him a good future and all the endeavors that he plans to take on. So,
great.
That
one's got a little. This has a little more hair on it. Well, here.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you for the comments. Does anybody else wish to speak tonight? Okay. Closing public comment. We have no presentations. So at this point, we'll bring up the consent calendar. We have A1 and A2. Does anybody wish to and A3? Does anybody wish to discuss anything on the consent calendar? Or pull anything? Okay. Do we have a? Can I get a motion?
I move we accept the consent calendar.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? Seeing none. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Moving on, we're into B1, CUP 18-09 and CDP 18-015. This is site location 918 Mesa Street in Morro Bay. Staff report, please. And I have to welcome our new staff.
Yeah, I'd like to welcome Willow Yukidi, our new assistant planner. She's taking Joan's spot. She moves over chairs from, she was our planning intern, and we went through a recruitment process and hired Willow to take Joan's place. We're happy to have her, and this was her first presentation before the Planning Commission, so treat her nicely.
Never. Okay, Willow.
Thank you very much, and good evening, commissioners and public. This project is a request for a coastal development permit and conditional use permit approval for an addition to an existing detached garage and conversion of that garage into an accessory dwelling unit with no proposed changes to the existing non-conforming single-family residence. The property is located in the R1 single-family residential zone outside of the Coastal Commission appeals jurisdiction and sits south of Marina Street, east of Kern Avenue, west of Madeira Avenue, and north of Anchor Street. The 5,000-square-foot parcel is surrounded by R1 on all sides. This is the existing residence as seen from Mesa Street, with arrows pointing to where the accessory dwelling unit is proposed on the back portion of the lot. The house was built in 1959 and added 460 square feet of habitable area in 1991. Today, it is an existing 1,188-square-foot home with a 398-square-foot detached garage. The applicant is proposing to add 139 square feet of habitable area to the detached garage and convert that garage into an accessory dwelling unit. Sorry, excuse me. The primary residence is nonconforming with regards to the west and east side setbacks, with the west being 3 and 4.5 inches, where 5 feet is the requirement, and the east being 4 feet, where 5 feet is the requirement. The accessory dwelling unit, when converted, will be nonconforming with regards to building separation. The parking is conforming due to changes in California state law regarding accessory dwelling units. So to address these nonconformities, no work is proposed in the required 5-foot setbacks on either side of the lot. As you will see on the site plan, the proposed additions step in to remain conforming. The existing detached garage is conforming as it stands today with roughly 6 feet and 4 inches of separation from the primary residence. However, when it is converted to an accessory dwelling unit, it will be non-conforming as the requirement for building separation for residences on the same site is 10 feet, which would require major reconstruction in order to comply. Updates to California state law mandate that if a garage structure is demolished in the process of building an accessory dwelling unit, those two required spaces may be replaced in any configuration on the site, including tandem spaces, which this site allows for. There is also no longer a requirement to provide a parking space for accessory dwelling units if it is within a half mile of a transit stop, and this project has 1.3 miles to the west. The project proposes to remove 2 birch trees in the process of the construction and will be in accordance with the city's major vegetation removal, replacement, and protection guidelines, which prohibits removal of trees during nesting season, which is from February 1st to June 30th. Here is the existing site plan, where you can see the current configuration of the home and the garage on the lot. And this is the proposed site plan that shows that there are no changes to the existing non-conforming single-family residence and the 2 small additions to the front and rear of the detached garage. It also shows the availability for 2 10-by-20 spaces to be located tandem in the driveway and completely outside of the public right-of-way. This is a photo simulation that shows what the proposed addition would look like from Mesa Street. And the project is in accordance with the city's residential design guidelines with regards to relationship to existing homes, as no changes are proposed to the overall design of the site. Scale and mass, as no changes to the mass or scale of the building are proposed. Surface articulation, as the planter trellis will help to avoid any blank wall space facing Mesa Street. Building orientation, as the entryway to the primary residence is visible from the street and no changes are proposed. Garage and driveway design, as the primary residence is the most pronounced portion of the front facade. Building materials, as the additions are to be consistent with the colors and materials of the garage of the primary residence. And architectural elements, as the features will be consistent with the design of the primary residence. Therefore, it is staff's recommendation that the Planning Commission approve the requested coastal development permit and conditional use permit by adopting Planning Commission Resolution 0119, subject to the findings and conditions of approval. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any about this project. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Has anybody had any ex parte communications they'd like to disclose? Okay. Do we have questions for staff?
I just had one question, and this might be for Scott. I needed my memory refreshed. Secondary units with respect to availability as vacation rentals, I think currently they're not available as vacation rentals.
There's a waiting list, right?
So this is combining a little bit of state law and the portions of our existing secondary dwelling unit ordinance that are about three removed, but there are portions of it that exist and were not negated by the updated state law. And so, no, you wouldn't be able to use the secondary unit at this point, or accessory dwelling unit at this point, as a vacation rental. Certainly that will be addressed moving forward in the update of the zoning code.
Any further? Jesse?
One question. I wasn't quite following the the floor plan. Are they connected? It looks like there's a wall and a gate or a door between the
They're
two?
They're detached. That's the existing patio site.
Make sure you speak.
Please.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Bring your mic. It's detached. There's a patio that's covered in the back.
Okay, so there's it looks like a wall with a door between the proposed ADU and that and the existing residence. Is that just a gate or an fence or?
It says existing gate fence.
Oh, right. Does it say there?
Is that?
Okay, I was looking at the floor plan. Okay.
In the corner there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Richard? Anything? Michael? I've got a kind of a overarching question.
Sure.
Seeing as this is now non-conforming.
Right.
So we have, you know, it's existing, the garage is existing as a conforming. We then put an ADU in it, and we create a non-conforming use. So we are actually doing work within the structure, within the setback area that's non-conforming. Mm-hmm. So how can we create a non-conforming condition and still be in compliance?
Accessory dwelling unit law specifically exempts the conversion of garage, even if garages to accessory dwelling units, from complying with setback requirements if the garage exists in a non-conforming situation related to setback.
Okay.
And no additions will be built in the side setbacks where it's non-conforming. The building or the additions step in to meet that 5-foot requirement.
Okay. But we're still doing work inside, doing a conversion and a change of use,
which is specifically allowed by the update to the state law related to accessory dwelling units.
Okay. What about conditioning it so that we kind of mitigate some of the fire hazards by requiring sprinklers in the new use? Is that allowed?
It's not currently part of our municipal code from a requirement standpoint.
Okay, but we're creating a use that's a higher hazard than it was before. So by mitigating it with fire sprinklers, would we be allowed to do that by state law?
I mean, you're doing this.
You're sort of treating these as one-offs now. Not a huge fan of that when it relates to fire sprinklers. I don't have a problem with requiring fire sprinklers, and in fact, I'm going to be working with the fire department when we go through the code update process to, you know, add in some additional items related to fire sprinkling requirements for the city and as part of our local amendments. But I mean, that's where it should live. Versus doing it one-off.
Okay, because I'm just concerned that the nonconformity is based on fire considerations, fire resistance considerations, and we're not requiring any changes to the building envelope that I see on this. So, okay, I guess that would be for a discussion.
On that same note, if I can expand on that, so I assume fire sprinklers be required because it's a dwelling unit where a dwelling unit did not exist and therefore required specifically by the residential code. So am I incorrect in assuming that?
I didn't see it on the...
Yeah, we weren't. We're not requiring it.
Not in the fire conditions that I saw.
Okay, that seems to be not what we should do in this case. I mean, if you have a dwelling unit, if you are creating a dwelling unit per the CRC, California Residential Code, you're going to require sprinklers every time. So if there's if that's not the case, I would be in favor of conditioning it.
Basically, because the nonconformity, for me, the nonconformity that we're creating is based on fire safety conditions.
Right. Well, and setbacks to the property line for a non-sprinkled residence are 5 feet.
Yeah.
So I guess that was my assumption also, is that there were sprinkles.
Yeah, I didn't see that. If I missed that, I would gladly be corrected. Anybody else have any other questions? So we'll move forward, and Scott will let you research that.
Okay.
With the applicant, we'll open this up for public comment and open it up to the applicant.
Good evening, Commission. Chris Parker, the architect for the project. Thank you for the presentation. Looks like the main discussion topic might be the fire sprinklers. I was going to read from the ADU guidelines, and which is why we chose to use the garage with the current setbacks. It basically, one of the items says has side and rear setbacks that are sufficient for fire safety. So it throws out the zoning ordinance in that case, and it deals with fire safety. I believe there's other methods to get the setback reduced from the 5 feet, if I'm not correct, as far as 1 hour rated walls and such.
I'm not sure. I guess I would just go back to, you know, if you're creating a dwelling unit where one didn't exist, it's very clear in the CRC that you shall sprinkle.
Chris, can you go ahead and give your presentation?
I really didn't have much more to say. I just wanted to add that to the discussion from the ADU guidelines. It specifically mentions basically that the zoning setbacks aren't the requirements, fire safety.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Would anybody else like to speak? Please come forward.
I'm Charlotte Kelly, and I live at 907 Mesa, and I'm opposed to the existing garage being changed into a living dwelling. I do believe that it's a very, very small space, and putting that in there would not work, especially for the parking. They say that there's tandem parking in the drive, but I don't see how that would work since we already have parking for the person who's living in the home, parking in that drive now. There would not be parking in the tandem, and I don't know who would enforce that if there were parking in there. Also, the nonconformance of the property, that it's a very tiny space, and putting another dwelling back in there is not, I don't think, to the best interest of the neighbors or the neighborhood, and that's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you very much. Would anybody else like to speak to this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll leave public comment open. And Chris, would you like to step forward again if we have any questions? Does anybody have any questions for Chris? Okay, Michael?
Chris, it looks like you're putting in new plumbing and you're putting in a bathroom and a kitchen. And what's left of the garage in this process? Are you cutting up the slab to put in all the drainage lines?
There's a little bit of plumbing there already, because I think at one time there probably was a washer and dryer out there, but there's existing plumbing there. Be saw cutting the slab to run some of that stuff, or taking it to the exterior walls and then connecting it up, trying to maintain the structure, though.
You're trying to keep the roof intact?
I believe the roof will be updated as well, because it needs a little bit of work.
You know, the roof's very complex as you go toward the front. It looks like you actually have a roof, and then a roof over the bathroom, and then a roof over the entrance.
Yeah, because there is the addition of the bathroom to the front, and so that created basically an additional roof there that would, and I tried to add a little porch area over that front door just to give a little coverage.
And is everything being set up that it drains toward the street, or how are you taking care of the drainage?
You're talking about rainwater itself?
Yeah.
We'll end up needing to keep it on site. We're not going to, because of stormwater situations.
Okay, that's all.
Chris, just had a since you're doing an update on the the plumbing and stuff. In your estimation, what would it take? Just out of curiosity, to put in sprinklers. I mean, do you have to put in a new water meter and a new water main?
Typically, we're having to upsize water meter in the city. A lot of times, we'll have to upsize the line to the meter, and then obviously from the meter, run a 1.5 to 2 inch line to the structure. So we've had to deal with in the past.
Yeah. Okay. So kind of okay. Thanks.
Joseph, do you want to, any questions? Okay. Questions? Okay. Jesse, do you have any more questions?
So, Chris, you started talking about fire-resistive wall systems and stuff. So how would you propose on this house with windows to the side and a patio
door? That's what I was looking at.
To the
exterior side yard, or you're talking?
Well, both. To the exterior side wall for the existing structure, and then for the interior side wall to that would be adjacent in the non-conforming.
Now, the exterior side yard, there's the one existing window sitting there currently, probably looking directly at a fence. If need be, that could be filled in and be so it can be stuck a wall, because then the walls jog into the 5 feet for the other windows.
Right.
The interior side yard, basically we're over 6 feet away from what is a post to that covered porch. So we have the distance there. And then anything new that we're showing proposed, we're keeping the 10 feet away to go with the zoning ordinances.
But on the existing would be 6 feet 3 inches, and it and the requirement's 10 feet, I believe, for separation from dwelling unit to dwelling unit.
I think for
it's just a zoning code requirement, though. It's not a building code requirement.
That was the zoning.
Code. Yeah. Okay. I honestly, it's an arbitrary number.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Okay, bringing it back to the commission for comments at this point. Suggestions? Motions?
I would note that before you do anything else, I'd be happy to do the code analysis on the fire sprinkler requirement, to sit down with our fire marshal and building inspector and go through that process, and I would commit to doing that. If you give me that leeway or that direction, I will do that, and if it's appropriate, I will add the requirement.
Okay. Should we?
I mean, building code triggers it. They have to do it anyway.
Should we condition the motion for that?
That's what I was saying. If you'd like me to go do that, you can provide that direction, and we would require that of the project accordingly, if that's what we came up with.
Okay. And I'd just like to state...
Not having my code book sitting here in front of me.
Okay. I'd like to state for the public comment, too, that we had, that this is a state law, so we're stuck conforming to state law, so that we have very little discretion on approving an ADU unit in any garage and in almost any parking situation, so... We're stuck with very little wiggle room here, so.
Yeah, I'd like to kind of back that up. We're in a housing crisis in the state of California. We're required to do whatever we can to create or to help alleviate that by creating or relaxing our ordinances where necessary to create housing units. So parking is going to be a continuing problem and an increasingly continuing problem. And, we're not ignorant of that fact. It's just kind of an unintended consequence of creating these housing units. So I understand where you're coming from, and to a point I agree that parking is going to be impacted, but almost necessarily so.
Okay.
I just wanted to mention, for Scott's benefit, taking notes, that I think it's really difficult to, on one hand, see the densification with the accessory dwelling units, which I totally support, but with a loss of fire protection. I thought it was automatic that if you were going to be doing something like this, we'd be putting in sprinklers, because I think we'd be better off looking at trying to not get into the cost of the meter if you've got domestic water there that's for one or two, three heads maximum at this type of thing. So I think there's kind of a
So that's what I was referring to. I mean, I've had these conversations with our fire marshal, fire department, fire chief, and we're going to be looking at some local amendments to close some of the gaps and some of the issues that we see. I mean, we've had, you know, a number of fires, you're probably all aware of that, in town recently, and there's different things we're looking to fix, not specifically related to ADUs, but just in general. It's one of the reasons why we're looking at it and looking a little more closely so we can alleviate some of the issues that resulted in, you know, some of our houses burning and those types of things. So.
Yeah, I think it's important.
Kind of following up with what Michael was saying, so I can be clear, what you're going to talk about is maybe like when we do a ADU addition, you might not need to upsize to a, you know, a bigger main. You might have enough flow rate with the existing main.
Well, I mean, in this instance, I don't know that, I mean, depending on what the size of the service is, you probably wouldn't need necessarily more than a one-inch service on this because it's a tiny house.
Right.
And I think you're required to have a separate service when the house is detached by our ordinance. So there's just a couple of other things we have to look at.
Okay. Okay, so like it's a possibility when you guys have a discussion that say, hey, somebody's converting their ADU to a, or a converting their garage to ADU,
They just need to have appropriate. I mean, they have to do the math so they have to show that they have appropriate pressure.
Yeah, and pressure
system,
and
flow for it to work.
Okay.
Yeah, flow,
okay. So. All right, thanks.
Yeah, I think it's clear from the way that the state law was written that they clearly did not want it. Not surprisingly, didn't want to increase in any way, you know, fire hazard. So it's really up to us to make sure that inadvertently something like that isn't caused. The only other thing I was looking at was the. It's a small, admittedly a small thing. The trellis to break up the facade at the very front, it just strikes me that a trellis is so impermanent. And I was also looking at that facade, and I think I'd like to see something more permanent to break up that facade rather than something as temporal as a trellis in a plant. That's it.
Okay. Okay, so is anybody willing to develop a motion here?
Before we go forward, I wouldn't support anything that – I wouldn't support a motion that didn't include fire sprinklers.
So Chris just showed me, and that actually triggered my memory. SB 1069 actually prohibits us from requiring fire sprinklers if they weren't required in the main residence as a whole. There are some exceptions to those, which is why – and this is – haven't had this conversation in a little while – why we were going to sit down with the at the fire department as we go through review of the code update to see what we can do as it relates to these things. But I'm still happy if you give me that direction to go through the code analysis.
So I'm sorry, I missed that. So 10...
SB 1069, which is part of the ADU accessory dwelling unit law that came into effect on January 1, says you can't require fire sprinklers for the accessory dwelling unit if they weren't otherwise required for the main structure.
Okay. Even though we're doing more than 50%. Construction in the...
Yes, and this is, again, one of the reasons why we're going to be looking at it to see where there might be some ends there, because okay, there was some concern expressed.
I'm comfortable adding a condition that you review the...
Okay.
Review the conditions for the fire...
Okay, happy to.
...sprinkler requirements or fire-resistive construction requirements.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I don't know if I am.
Okay. Okay, so we got... So does somebody want to attempt a motion here?
She's trying to get your attention.
Pardon? Okay.
I didn't know if it was appropriate for me to say something more, but I did want to address the fact of affordable housing and having some place that I do believe that if this place is converted over, the rent would be exorbitant and it would not help. It would be affordable housing that we're looking for.
Okay, well, thank you, but we did have... public comment closed, so we're allowed it. Thank you very much. Okay. Okay, so where do you want to go? Do you guys want to deny this? Do you want to continue it? Do you want to... I think we need a motion to do something.
I'm going to say that I think I need a little more clarity on what we're approving. And if we're intensifying the density and creating a greater fire hazard, like Commissioner Lucas is saying, I'm not in favor of doing that until we have some clarity that we are going to have fire sprinklers in this residence, and if it's not going to be required, I don't think I support this.
Okay.
I think we really need clarity on this, because what it ultimately does is it affects the insurance costs for the owner, but it also ultimately, if you start to see a pattern, especially if there's accidents, it starts to make the insurance company look at what are your codes here, and I I don't want to inadvertently raise somebody else's rates because we're not doing something smart with these houses.
So I mean, it's compliance with state law. You're not going to have any change as it relates to fire insurance requirements.
But we
complying with state law. I mean, that's not going to happen.
As the zoning reflects the community, we can always go higher regulation than the codes,
as long as it doesn't violate state law. And so there's nuance in there, and there are some areas where we can probably get in between where the law gives you it's not real clear. I mean, it just gives you that one statement. It doesn't say what options you have associated with it. So there might be other options, and that's one of the things we're going to look at when we do the code update. But as it stands, the legislation that's put in place says you can't require it for the accessory dwelling unit if it wasn't otherwise required for the single-family home. If the single-family home is sprinkled, then you can require it for the accessory dwelling unit. If they're attached and connected, you can require them, depending on the size of the structure.
So Scott, what if we have more than 50%, you know, a greater share of the, you know, of the structure being remodeled, which this clearly is, that we would require sprinklers on the main house if we did that. So then, therefore, could we require that on the ADU?
Again, that's one of the things we're looking at.
So so give us some guidance here, Scott. You think we should continue this?
You certainly can continue it, but I don't know what I'm going to bring back other than what I've told you. Okay. I'm happy to go do the code analysis to verify, you know, all the ins and outs of it. I'm happy to sit down and do it just because I haven't done it prior to the meeting. But it's really going to fall down to compliance with state law and what that is. You know, so I don't know that continuance gets us much. If you tell me to go look it up, even if you didn't tell me to go look it up, I'd go look it up. But I mean, if you tell me that, I'll go make sure that we're compliant and verify it. That's all. I mean,
okay. So I guess I would request a motion that we would condition the project for that fire safety review by staff. I think that's as far
as we can go. I don't support it in any event without sprinklers.
Okay. So does somebody want to try a motion here?
Yeah, I'll try a motion.
Okay.
Make a motion to approve resolution PC01-19, CPU 1809, and coastal development permit 18015 as for 918 Mesa Street as written, with the addition that we have planning staff review the code analysis regarding with the fire
department. Sprinklers, and if fire sprinklers are required, that we require them for the project. If they're not, that
right, what's required for the project,
including fire resistive.
We'll look at that as well. Yeah, right. That's perfect. So, will you include the chair's recommendation? Include fire resistive construction in your motion.
Resistant.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Do we have a second? Somebody wish to second?
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay, so let's bring this forward for discussion then. We have a motion and a second. Would anybody like to improve on this? Or
I think the fire-resistive construction, the outside is being stuccoed, so that's a new perimeter exterior. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why they couldn't get a rated wall out there. You're allowed a certain number of openings.
But the size of the windows would be restricted in a one-hour wall. I think you're talking about
it would actually comply with 25% or less openings in that fire, in a residential modified fire.
Yeah, I just want to be very cautious that we don't, that we understand when the state laws say these things, they potentially are putting other properties at risk, mm-hmm. especially when we have these setback issues. And now we've, even though you said it was arbitrary, there is a certain distance that dwelling sets the other dwelling on fire. That 10 feet maybe wouldn't have done it, but 6 feet does. You know, so I think as much as I like the scenographic spatial quality of dense construction in an almost urban kind of way that they're creating, we have to be very cautious. We're creating more problems in the town as we get it more dense. So I'm okay with the fire-resistive construction issues, but I think that's something that the state probably doesn't always think through everything. Yeah. If they're thinking everybody's suburban garage is going to have these conversions when we get into these tighter situations.
And I think we're going to be seeing this on a lot of these detached garage where we have 1 foot offsets from the property line where they were allowed.
Well, that's kind of my point is I didn't look as closely as I probably could have when I drove by, but hypothetically, if the neighbor to the, what is it, the, if the neighbor on the side, you know, affected has a non-conforming setback that's less than 3 feet, so we could end up with, you know, in theory, a dwelling unit 3 or 4 feet away from an existing garage. You know, you have a garage fire, and then all of a sudden you have a real problem.
And we have hedges and trees in the on those adjacent lots too.
Right. So I think as if we're gonna, I mean, it seems like we have some discretion here because obviously it's come to us for a decision. So I don't know that I don't know that that's what the intent was. I mean, but we do have some discretion here, obviously. So.
Okay. So, any other discussion, or should we call the vote? Joseph, you have this pensive look.
Well, it's a confusing intersection of issues. I mean, it seems pretty clear from what Scott has told us that, admittedly, after some additional research, that the state, by the clear meaning of the words, is saying no, you can't compel sprinklers in this situation. Yet, from a commonsensical standpoint, this is a new dwelling, and we've restricted, you know, the passage that the fire department might use someday. From a common sense standpoint, we should. And I'm bothered by that. I really am.
Yeah. And that's a conundrum I'm seeing also. But we are also compelled by state law too.
Well, that's kind of where I'm a little torn, and I know this is apples and oranges, and just for, you know, I know in a different, very close jurisdiction that this would be required to have sprinklers. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's call the vote. Call the question on this.
Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Commissioner Sadowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Barron?
No.
Commissioner Ingrafia?
You know, I'm going to say no.
Commissioner Lohr?
I'm really torn on this one, but I think, you know, that we have to trust staff that if there is a potential to upgrade the safety conditions here, I think we do have to follow state law and approve this. So I will say yes. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And I think if there's any way that we can push a requirement in our, especially in our new update, that ADUs or non-conforming structures are required to have a higher level of fire safety requirements.
And I know first cost of putting things in is expensive, but I can't imagine with a situation where you're becoming a owner or leaser that there isn't a fire insurance premium difference between having something sprinklered versus non-sprinklered.
I'll tell you why it's in state law. I mean, I tell you why it's there exactly. It's there because those are one of the things that cities were putting in place that made the accessory dwelling units more expensive, and they said knock it off. I mean, it's just the legislature really is saying what Commissioner Barron said, and that is, look, we have a housing crisis in the state of California. Cities, get over yourselves and stop putting up barriers in place of putting accessory dwelling units up, and they're removing our authority. I mean, they've been doing it systematically for years. Because cities are creative and they can come up with jurisdictions, counties as well, can come up with unique ways to make it harder to put these things in. And the legislature keeps saying, no, if you look at the intent of this, the preamble that leads into the state law, it tells you like why they want it. And it says the state has a housing crisis and has for the last 10 plus years. So that's where they're coming from, just so you understand why they put things like that into writing and into law.
Okay. Anybody else have any other comments on this, or before we move on?
Yeah, just real quick, Scott. With regards to this being turned into a vacation rental, that's going to be handled at a different venue or a different.
I think we actually put it into the draft zoning code as it relates to accessory dwelling units, but it'll also be made clear in our vacation rental ordinance.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you guys are handling that side of it.
As part of our ongoing update of the general plan zoning code update.
Okay, new business. This is item number C1. It's a conceptual review, CPO-581, UPO-533, S00-134. This is a site located at 233 Atascadero. I believe that's Atascadero Road, but in Morro Bay, California. So we have a conceptual review. Do we have a presentation?
Yes, we do, and I believe AGP is going to load the video presentation, the PowerPoint presentation. Thank you. So yes, this is a conceptual review item tonight. This is not a public hearing. This is a project proposed to be located at 233 Atascadero Road. It is a proposed 83 guest room hotel, three stories, and it is would be located on a currently vacant 2-acre lot in the commercial visitor serving zoning district and in a planned development overlay zone. And here is a picture of the zoning map for the city that shows the CVS PD designation. The property is located on Atascadero Road near the northwest intersection of Highway 1 and Atascadero Road. Property located east and south of this location is Morro Bay High School, and the property is also located within a floodplain. Some details about the hotel. The project, as you can see, includes guest rooms on all three floors. It's the slide on the screen itemizes what's on each floor. On the first floor, though, it also does include the guest check-in lobby, food prep and breakfast area, indoor pool for guests, meeting room, laundry, and manager's office. Here is an image of the proposed hotel. This is a rendering image that is showing the south and east elevations on the screen. There was a color and materials board that was provided by the applicant, and that has been given to the planning commissioners located on the dais, but is also reflective of this image. And before I go any further, I just wanted to point out that there was agenda correspondence received by city staff, and there are extra copies on the public table over there. And then, in addition, there was a height exhibit that was provided to the Planning Commission shortly before the meeting started, and there are extra copies for the public also on the public table over there. The hotel's architectural style is explained in Exhibit B of the staff report. A write-up was provided by the architect. It's been designed to break up the long massing of the building with material changes and mixture of neutral earth tones. The flat roof design is proposed to minimize height. This image shows, as I said, south and east. And also, as you can see at the left side of the screen, the hotel project includes a proposed porte-cochere for the covered entry, providing a visual interest. Here's the proposed site plan, which shows the hotel situated in the center of the lot with 90 parking spaces surrounding the building. This includes 20 compact parking spaces, 9 electric vehicle parking spaces, and a total of 5 van-accessible ADA parking spaces. The site plan also shows 19 bike parking spaces, trash enclosure, and the one-way guest drop-off pickup at the hotel entry. The slide before you is the zoning ordinance standards, and of particular note for tonight, and the reason we are here for the conceptual review. The areas in yellow show the project issues currently. The height of the proposed hotel is at approximately 35 and a half feet. The maximum height in this zoning district is 30 feet, and so it is currently over height. as well as short two parking spaces, and the applicant is also proposing an alternative arrangement for landscape planner area requirements. However, the property is in the planned development overlay zone, and pursuant to that overlay, the purpose of that overlay zone, as it reads in our code, is to provide for detailed and substantial analysis of development on parcels which, because of location, size, or public ownership, warrant special review. This overlay zone is also intended to allow for the modification of or exemption from the development standards of the primary zone, which would otherwise apply if such action would result in better design or other public benefit. And as I stated, that is the reason for the conceptual review tonight. The applicant has made an application for a coastal development permit, conditional use permit, and a lot merger. There are currently some issues with the project, namely the height, three main issues: the height, the visual impacts, and parking. The conceptual review process, staff has brought that to the Planning Commission for the last approximately 3 to 4 years now, where that conceptual review process allows applicants to get early review and feedback from the Planning Commission prior to a public hearing action being taken. So currently the status of the planning application that the applicant applied for is currently on hold while we resolve these kind of issues, and as noted in the third bullet there on the screen, which is namely the height, visual impacts, and parking. As I noted, the requirements under the city's plan development overlay, there are requirements for Planning Commission to make a finding of public benefit, and for this particular project, the applicant has proposed three main areas of public benefit. These are also shown on plan sheet A15 in your packet. These include, first, a total of 9 electric vehicle charging stations, one of which would be ADA accessible. This is shown on plan sheet A3. Of the 9 EV spaces, 7 of those would be level 2 chargers, and 2 of the spaces would be level 3 chargers, which is also known as a DC fast charger, and they can charge considerably faster than a level 2. Currently, there are no level 3 charging stations along the Highway 1 corridor in this county. So as I noted in the staff report, that would be the Highway 1 North Coast corridor. And that's information that I received from the County of SLO's Air Pollution Control District staff. Secondly, the next item is public benefit, including extension of the Class 1 bike lane across the frontage of the property. There is currently a Class 2 bike lane. The applicant is proposing to upgrade that to Class 1 to provide a safe path of travel for bicyclists and students passing by the property. And third, the applicant is proposing an offer of dedication to Morro Bay High School, San Luis Coastal Unified School District. That would allow for the existing extension of the bike path from the school to the street. And there is currently bike path access there, but there is a, as noted on the site plan, a portion of the applicant's property that juts out west into that area. So the three main considerations to this project: in the base zoning district, the maximum height is 30 feet above average natural grade, and the property is currently proposed at 35.42 feet or 35 feet 5 inches. The building is located in a floodplain, which requires structures to be built 2 feet above base flood elevation unless otherwise floodproof. And per the city's floodplain ordinance, the structure can be designed to build 1 foot below BFE or base flood elevation with 3 feet floodproofed, and that's what's shown in on the plans. This would allow the building height impacts to be mitigated to have less of an overall height impact. And then the next project consideration is the parking and parking design standards. You will notice on the site plan, they are only proposing 90 parking spaces. The 90 number does include the EV and the handicap spaces. And they are also proposing an alternative to the parking lot planter areas. And I have a slide that I will get into that in a moment. The next few slides, I'm going to walk you through the elevations that are in the plans. This is a close-up of the south elevation, the hotel entry area. East elevation on top, close-up, and then the overall east elevation on the bottom, and this would be from the highway side. And then the north elevation, this would be along the border where the cypress trees are. And just as a note, the cypress trees that are along the north and the west property are not proposed for removal. So they would still provide that buffer to the high school. West elevation, and again the same, the close-up on the top slide, and then the which is would be the southwest, and then the overall west elevation on the bottom. In this slide, the top image of the screen is a building height study showing line of sight from Highway 1. That was prepared to illustrate the difference in elevation from Highway 1. The property sits below the elevation of the highway. It also depicts the highway elevation approximately parallel to the line of the second story. And I believe that the applicant's representative may speak further about this in the image that they provided during their public comment. The bottom image of the screen shows the section detail, and on this image you can see the right side of the screen in blue is the area of the hotel lobby, which is that south elevation. Story poles. So in order to further evaluate the height impacts for this project, story poles were erected on site on January 3rd, and hopefully you were able to get out and have a chance to view them during daylight hours. In this slide, this is a picture of the poles right after they went up. The orange paint at the top of the pole indicates the area of the pole that is over the height limit, and I've drawn on there some red arrows because I realize that from a distance it may be kind of hard to discern the orange from this image. In viewing the story poles after they were up, there appears to show no visual impact to those who are traveling on northbound Highway 1 looking west. However, on southbound Highway 1, despite the elevation difference between the property and Highway 1, there is a small portion of the building at the southern portion of the building where some view blockage of Moore Rock occurs. And just wanted to point out too, this view blockage was only noticed from Highway 1. Staff did go out to both Main Street and Sunset, which were the streets to the east, and of course the difference in Sunset at a higher elevation, it did not block from that distance. The next couple of slides are visual simulations provided by the applicant. These were slides that these location points were requested by staff, and unfortunately they do not show the view impact from the south, or excuse me, they do not show the view impact from the highway looking toward the rock because it was not really apparent until the story poles were up exactly where that view impact was going to occur, and these were done a few months beforehand. So here you see the hotel on the right simulated at the point of the exiting Highway 1 southbound off-ramp. The applicant would be required to revise their visual simulations prior to a public hearing for planning approval. And so to help with that, I do have about a 15-second video to help illustrate the view, and I thought that I would be able to play this. So I'm going to pause for a second, and I'm going to press play on that.
Okay, while she's setting up, has anybody had ex parte communications? Okay.
Thank you.
lost it. Okay, so this is starting at the parking, high school parking lot. I am not driving. I'm the passenger, so everything was safe. There's the poles. And so I realize that goes pretty quickly. So to help, and then it stops there at the hotel across the street. So then the next few images I'll show you are basically screenshots. So I was taking pictures and... So I was taking pictures as I was taking video. So these are video pictures. In fact, you can see the glare of the car's window in the upper left corner. Poles, and then I'm driving south, continuing to drive south. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yes, and in the story pole exhibit, in the first picture I had with the red arrow showing the story poles, you see that the power pole is taller.
Yeah.
And I would point out we did have a surveyor certify the top of poles to the plans provided by the applicant. So, but I will move on. In this area here you can see the area that's orange. And then this basically is a little exhibit that was prepared. And basically it takes the top three pictures are three of the pictures that you just saw going past. And it highlights for you the views traveling on Highway 1. So the red is just kind of, the top of the red is the top of the pole there. And it shows my location there on Highway 1, so having just passed the off-ramp, the area of view impact to the rock. In this image here, the red rectangle is shorter because it's calling out to you the portion of the pole that's orange. So considering that that would be the portion of the height from 30 to the 35 feet that they're requesting. The whole building and then that additional amount that's over what the base zoning district would allow them. So moving on to parking. So for the parking, due to site and layout constraints with this project, an 83-unit hotel would ordinarily require 92 parking spaces by our ordinance. That's the same number of parking spaces that would be required under our new draft zoning code, the one that's currently under draft, by the way. They are proposing 90 parking spaces shown on plans. And in addition to that, they are also requesting modification for parking design standards. So our current parking design standards require one parking lot planter area after every five stalls. In lieu of the planter area, applicant is proposing parking diamond areas to provide a commensurate amount of tree shading for the parking lot. So their position was that if the intent of the ordinance to require parking lot planter areas is to provide for shading and reduce heat island effect. Their alternative was to create parking diamonds that would... And they provided a parking shade study, and this shows tree canopy at mature size. The gray shaded area is showing the shaded area of the parking lot versus the blue is those portions of the parking lot that are not shaded. And that the purpose of this shade study would show that 50% of the parking lot is shaded at maturity. It's also worth pointing out, though, that although they're not compliant with this particular requirement in our parking ordinance, staff also did a Google area view of just about as many commercial parking lots in the city that we could find, namely, you know, Cypress Plaza, where the AutoZone, I mean, many of these, and for whatever reason, almost none of them have the planter area after every five stalls. And I can't speak to why that is or how those projects were approved, but what they're proposing would not be too greatly dissimilar to just about every other commercial parking lot in the city. However, it is a modification to what our code says, and so staff's bringing that forward to you for your input. So in conclusion, the project as proposed does not meet building height limits for hotels in the CVS zoning district. However, due to its location in a planned development overlay, modification of development standards such as height are allowed with Planning Commission approval based on a finding of public benefit. This location has both advantages and disadvantages in that its highway location is situated below the elevation of the highway, which naturally mitigates some of the impact of the three-story building. Disadvantages includes its location in the floodplain, which by the city's ordinance would require finished floor elevations 2 feet above base flood elevations. There are also view impacts to consider, and in looking at the plans, it is possible that perhaps the lobby design might be able to be redesigned to lower the height of the building in that portion of the building, since the view impacts seem to be more apparent on the southern portion of the property, that southern property area. Applicant is requesting conceptual review by Planning Commission to provide input on these items. And in reviewing these impacts, Planning Commission should provide feedback to the applicant this evening on whether the project proposed with its proposed public benefit warrants consideration based on both its location and also city policies regarding protection and enhancement of visual resources. With that, I'll conclude the presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, great. Thank you, Cindy. Do we have questions? Jesse?
I did have a question. I'm not sure if the public saw this same diagram. Did they see this?
I received about 10 copies from the applicant, and I put some on the public table right there. So
my question was the FEMA standard. So diagram 3, which is currently proposed, does not meet the FEMA standard?
So our local floodplain ordinance requires 2 feet above base flood elevation. So some jurisdictions have different way of handling that through their local ordinances. We discussed the project with Public Works, and they can build the project at 1 foot below BFE if the first 3 feet are flood-proofed. So in a sense, you would still be protected.
So are we just talking like flood-resistant materials? Are we talking flood vents? We're not talking flood vents, right? Just flood-resistant materials, so block or concrete or something like that. Okay.
Yeah.
Joseph? Yeah, I'm recalling the development project at Quintana and Las Osas from several years ago. It's sometime in the festivities. Will there be a traffic study of this project?
There was a traffic study prepared. It was sent to Caltrans for review. They also provided biological report, archaeological report, phase one environmental site assessment, a number of documents. They're not presented or included in the staff report because it's not part of that would be brought forward with the public hearing process. Sure. And once we complete environmental review, as a conceptual review item, we're really trying to just get some feedback on these issues that I've discussed and, you know, and how do we move forward to a public hearing process.
And to be clear, this property was purchased
after the 30-foot height limitation. So I just want to put aside any notice issues.
Right, yes, yeah. We've had this 30-foot thing for decades.
Richard? Michael?
I've got a bunch, and tell me if you think some of them should be deferred till after the solicitor speaks. The first is the utility line that's there. Is that remaining, or is that getting undergrounded?
They would be required to underground utilities as a commercial structure.
The large transformer pole crossing is going underground?
That is my understanding.
Okay. And then do you know, is the dining room open to the public?
No, it would be, that would be the setup where it's, you know, free continental breakfast or whatever the hotelier envisions for his guests.
Okay. And then do we have any protections in here discussed about maintaining the tree viability of the high school's trees?
We have not addressed that yet just because of the nature of it being only at conceptual review. Likely that would be a point of discussion in the staff report when it comes back for public hearing and may result in a condition or two to ensure that. The high school also has conditions on their previous permits that they would have a tree management plan. So we'd want to coordinate that to make sure that we're covering it.
And then the way that you have the tree study up there, and those trees look like they're planted very close to the property line. So a lot of that tree canopy is going to be over Caltrans right away. Do we have any input from them as to what their policies are with planting that close, that's that major?
We have not yet routed the landscaping plan to Caltrans. I believe they've only weighed in on the traffic study. And again, we would be routing the full set of plans to Caltrans prior to public hearing, and they would also be seeing the CEQA document as well.
And then we discussed the implications, the aesthetic implications of floodproofing or materials changes, and then I imagine something happens at the doors, but I'm not sure what that is.
Yes, and I'm going to defer that question to the architect.
And then has the high school had any input on this at all? They were notified, but
yeah.
I didn't
yeah.
see any.
Yeah, I had some back and forth emails with them. I contacted three different key staff, including the principal at Morro Bay High School. They were fine with it. They had no comments of any, you know, real substance. The one comment that I did get from the principal of the high school was that he would be concerned if the pool was proposed to be outdoors because he wouldn't want kids trying to, you know, play hooky from school. but we had some back and forth, and I sent them the site plan, and there is a pool proposed, but it's indoors, and it, you know, typically, hotels of this sort, you need to swipe your room key to even access the pool room.
Okay, that's all I have.
Okay, thanks, Michael. You asked most of my questions already. So the other thing, Cindy, is on the parking shading plan,
mm-hmm.
I didn't see a 50% coverage of the parking lot. It seemed like it was at most, you know, of maybe the parking spaces. And my understanding was that it should be the parking lot.
Parking lot, okay.
The paving area. So
okay.
I would have concern.
Shading so, of it, of the entire parking lot versus
yeah.
shading of the spaces?
It's shading of the parking lot.
Oh, okay.
I'm concerned that we might, that maybe I don't understand it or maybe I read it wrong, but it doesn't look like that shading study.
Okay.
Showed that. What other solar or quote-unquote resilient or green features have they offered as far as benefits? Let's see, the EV charging, but that's about it.
Yeah, I cannot recall any at this time, but the applicant may be able to provide some additional details on other green features. I know that was some comments given from staff to the applicant early on in the process to encouraging them to incorporate some more green features.
Okay, great. Okay, so at this point, I'll open it up for public comment. And would the applicant please like to take a shot at it?
Good evening, Chair Lewis and Commissioners. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here tonight representing the applicant for the 233 Atascadero Road project. Before I begin, I'd like to thank staff for their time and assistance with this project, as we've had several conversations about the design and other components to this point in the process. We are here this evening for a conceptual review of the project because we feel it would be beneficial for both the applicant and the city to discuss the aspects and the merits of the proposed project, as well as the ability to answer questions in advance of any formal hearing. Staff has covered some major points in the report, so I'd like to add some background information and other specifics in order to provide the Commission with enough information. Specifically, I will be discussing the project design standards, the building height, visuals, parking and landscaping design, and public benefits for the exceptions requested under the PD overlay. As noted in your report, this proposed project is an 83-room hotel that includes several guest amenities such as meeting rooms, an indoor pool, dining, lounge area, and a fitness room. The architect has taken several important things into consideration in creating this design. First, this will be a brand hotel. While I would like to share more on this, it is premature at this stage in the process because the applicant must go through a complete rigorous process to be approved by the company, which includes approvals by the city before any announcements can be made. The brand hotels have specific criteria for interior and exterior design, so therefore the proposed project has incorporated features such as minimum ceiling heights, parapet roof, portico, and the new prototype elevations. Some of the brand hotel design's criteria has recently changed. However, this proposed design includes most of those recent elements. Next, I would like to cover the building height. The building as proposed exceeds the height limit by 5 feet 5 inches, and therefore an exception for this is requested. We have discussed the building height with staff over the past few months, and in order to find ways that the design can meet the hotel brand requirements, as well as adhering to the city regulations as best as possible and still have a viable project. As I mentioned, the hotel brand has requirements for ceiling heights for the rooms and the lobby, so in order to get the appropriate number of rooms for the project and meet the requirements, the building must be over 30 feet of average natural grade in height. To compound the problem, the site is located in a floodplain, so the building must also be elevated 2 feet above the base flood elevation. We've made a graphic attempt to explain the building height differences from the city's standards to a project without constraints to this project with the constraints we have. I know that the one that's in your plan set is a little bit confusing, so the architect prepared another one that I gave you this evening. So hopefully, and we did find one minor issue with the one that was in the plan set because we could have lowered the building to the average natural grade for a better example. But anyways, hopefully you can be able to follow along with my explanation with the graphic that you have. On the left side of the graphic, you will see a 30-foot height line and a proposed building. This graphic represents a project that is not within a floodplain area, and if that were the case, the proposed building would then be 2 feet 8 inches over the height limit. The middle graphic shows the proposed building meeting the floodplain standards. This proposal requires the importation of approximately 4 feet of fill material to meet the standard, and result will be a building 8 feet 5 inches over the height limit. After discussing the flood issue with the planning staff and the city engineer, we were able to lower the building by 3 feet by installing floodproofing on the first 3 feet of the building. This is shown on the graphic on the far right. So the end result in this proposed building, 5 feet 5 inches over the height, which 3 feet of it is directly related to the floodplain constraint. While I'm on the building height, I would like to mention that the visual impacts from Highway 1. As staff has shown in the photographs, there will be a partial visual impact of the rock as you're driving south on Highway 1. This partial impact will only be for 2 to 3 seconds since the highway speed is 65 in that area, and the impacts start approximately halfway through the project. The architect has designed the building to sit northward on the lot to allow more space on the southern side, which will additionally help mitigate this partial view impact. Last, on the building height, I would like to say that there is a good description in your report about the lower elevation of the site and the relationship to a motorist on Highway 1, which further reduces the visual impact for this project. An example of this lower site elevation from a highway would be the Sheriff's Building along Highway 1. The tallest point of the Sheriff's Building is slightly higher than the proposed hotel project that you have before you this evening. Next, I would like to talk about the parking and landscape design. The proposed project requires 92 parking spaces, but 90 are provided. In the previous submittals to the city, there was 92 spaces. However, working with staff on adding public benefits and addressing other comments, the parking lot was redesigned and one stall was lofted to the ADA EV striping, and the other was due to the lengthening of the parallel parking spaces and the general site modifications. As far as the landscaping and design, the intent of the city require regulations is to require landscaping and screening to break up the heat island effect, provide shading, and interrupt large expanses of parking areas. With the proposed project, several things have been done to address this. First, light-colored pavers and concrete will be mixed in with the asphalt portions of the parking lot and the site, which will reduce the heat island effect. Second, the use of tree diamonds are proposed rather than the long rectangular design every five spaces. The diamonds will be installed every five spaces, so the difference will be between this configuration and the finger islands would be the distance to the drive aisle. In this case, the proposed design will provide 50% shaded portion of the parking spaces at tree maturity, which reduces the heat island effect, and we expect tree maturity in 8 to 10 years. The last reason for this design is the impact on the parking spaces. The rectangular design will eliminate an additional 8 parking spaces. We believe that the current design accomplishes the goal to provide screening, reduction in the heat island effect, and sufficient parking spaces for the guests. Next, I would like to share a couple of other project features and pertinent information. First, in addition to the pervious pavers mentioned above, the design includes a bioretention basin and a light-colored roof, which will also help with the heat island effect. Second, I'd like the commission to be aware that we've had preliminary discussions and design review with Caltrans. Early on, they had a couple of questions, and one was regarding the queuing into the parking lot and the distance from the highway off-ramp to the driveway, and the second was possibly doing a joint driveway with the high school. A traffic report was done and indicates that the queuing will not be problematic, and we have provided a copy of the traffic report and other information to Caltrans. They have not gotten back to me lately, so we're going to continue to work with them, though. So this is what we've had to date. We also had a meeting with the school district a few months back to discuss the driveway and the portion of the property that extends toward their driveway. However, the school district said that it's not feasible to do a joint driveway with them for a number of reasons, and one of the main was liability. Furthermore, the small section of the property adjacent to the high school driveway has a recorded bike lane easement. However, there is a small piece between the easement and the school that is currently used by them, but there is no easement. We have discussed this with the district, as well as proposing a dedication of this part of the property to clean up this use. We don't have a final answer right now, but we will continue to work with the district so we can see if we can bring this to fruition. My last topic for tonight is the PD overlay and the public benefits. The applicant is requesting exceptions for the project as proposed for the building height, the parking spaces, and the landscape planter standards. We've worked closely with staff over the past few months as well as reviewing the city's 2017 economic development roadmap to create public benefits for this project in support of the exceptions that we were requesting. First, the economic plan identifies this site as part of one of the city's gateways and that the area has the potential to be transformed into a beautiful, welcoming threshold that announces the arrival to a special place. The plan also says that a great benefit would be resulting by planning enhanced streetscape along this important corridor entrance to Morro Bay. As such, the project as proposed includes landscaping screening along Highway 41 frontage and a dark gray colored metal fence with a neutral colored burnished rock block along the off-ramp side. This open-style fencing will also allow the landscape material planted on the interiors of the site to show through the open rail fence. Second, there are three other public benefits that we believe are key for the supporting these exceptions. First, the applicant is proposing to construct a Class 1 bike lane along Atascadero Road to complete an important segment of the pathway for the school and the beach beyond. It is our understanding that the previous property owners had entered an agreement or an understanding with the city that they would not build a Class 1 bikeway. However, this applicant understands the importance as he is a graduate of Morro Bay High School and lives in Morro Bay and sees the need here. I would also add that we discussed the Class 1 bikeway and sidewalk alignment with the city engineer so that we could propose the city what the city feels is best for the design. The second benefit is providing the EV charger stations on site. The project as proposed will install a total of 9 stations that will be open to the public. Two of the stations will be the fast charging level 3 units, and the balance will be the level 2. As mentioned in your report, these will be only fast charging stations located on the Highway 1 North Coast corridor. The third benefit is the land dedication to the high school. As I mentioned, as we are working with the school district and hope to see this accomplished. I think it is important to mention that staff has worked with us closely on the public benefits and other ideas, such as a welcome to Morro Bay sign. However, we were unable to find a location, appropriate location for a sign, or come up with another package of public benefits that would be equal to the bike lane, charging units, and land dedication. In conclusion, the proposed hotel, even though requesting the exception, presents a visual enhancement in the area with a proposed design that consists of massing brakes, material changes facing the highway to create a human scale and visual interest along the modern facade. The variety of neutral earth tone materials along with the elevations complement the surrounding landscaping, and the use of awnings and the architectural blade and signs and horizontal mass, the architectural blade balances the horizontal massing of the hotel. Ample recessed windows provide shadow lines and an architectural relief along the highway and Atascadero Road. The parapet design also provides cosmetic detailing and adds more than a typical flat roof looking at the building. The proposed earth tone palette consists of smooth plaster, decorative panels, and subtle rust-colored wood finish and neutral colored stone along the first floor and column bases. The hotel front will be aluminum and glass, and at the lobby entry and at the indoor pool, which will face Highway 1. In sum, the applicant has proposed a project that will contribute to the overall economic development that the city has identified in its plans and policies. Proposing a hotel in this particular location is a good fit for the character of the area, and adding a branded hotel at one of the gateways will be a positive contribution to the overall experience and economic vitality of the local businesses. As stated in your staff report, the project does offer an opportunity to improve the quality of landscaping along Highway 1 without visual impact from a lower elevation of the project site. In addition, although over height is still lower in elevation and a unique highway location for a hotel project that warrants consideration as proposed. So on behalf of the applicants, Mr. Patel, we certainly hope that the Planning Commission can support the exceptions that are requested in order to make a design work, and we certainly welcome your comments. This concludes my part of the presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions. I have both the project architect and the project engineer with me this evening, and I know that you did have some specific questions, so maybe we should just have you be able to ask our team your technical questions, and then we can have the appropriate person respond. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. This will be open for the public comment. Kathy, I'm sure we'll be calling you back up.
Thank you. I need to leave. I appreciate that. My name is Betty Winholtz, and I think this project is too important not to comment on. All the exceptions and issues that are involved with this project could be solved by just removing the third story. It takes care of the parking. It takes care of the visual impact. It takes care of the violation of the height limit. It kind of takes care of not having to give public benefits that don't really, I believe, aren't measurable to the kind of exceptions that are being asked for. It takes care of the flooding issue. They can still rise above the flooding plane without having to do special materials. My particular concern is with the parking, besides the height limit. By putting in the diamonds, that's probably where the smaller parking, narrower parking places will be. And, you know, very few people that travel in small cars. They're usually SUVs or trucks because you carry stuff with you or you're with your family. And my feeling is that you're providing two different standard of parking places, and large vehicles will try to fit into small ones. And by eliminating the islands, to try fit more parking in, there really are a number of parking issues with this proposal. And then by allowing the public, which you want, to use the charging areas, now you've got people who are not staying in the hotel taking up parking places as well. So now where is everybody going to stay if you had a full hotel? So I think there's a number of issues for you to look at in terms of the parking, and that they're really trying to squeeze in as many as they can when really they should be larger parking places or have the islands in them, and to provide that shade that's required. So please look at that, at taking away the third story.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
Caroline Brinkman, resident of Morro Bay. Mr. Chair and Commissioners, good evening. First of all, I want to express my appreciation to you as commissioners, because I think that you do listen to people in the community, and you do so with respect, and you answer our questions. So I really do appreciate that. I come to some meetings, but I also watch on television. I'm here to express my concerns about this building primarily because of traffic problems. And I think that the commission needs to take a real close look at this. I use the southbound exit a lot, and I am on my way to Atascadero, so I turn left and I go through the intersection at Main and Atascadero Road. And often when I do that, there are a number of high school students who are making their way in a leisurely way, as they should, and they're talking and they're taking advantage of the fresh air. But it causes, I have to say, it really causes quite a delay, and I don't see that that will stop. So every time they go to lunch, that is a problem. And it's a problem anyway in that intersection. I haven't seen any road rage there, but I really wonder if it does not present a danger to students to put in an 83-room hotel there. I think traffic mitigation really has to be considered. I'm not sure then what will happen also as faculty and staff and students come in the morning and leave in the afternoon. I think that I just envision a traffic nightmare there. So I would just encourage you to really consider that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, please.
My name is Kevin Groshaw. I'm a resident of North Morro Bay. I like the project. The heights don't seem to bother me because it's just a few seconds on that highway where the limitations are. But the site plan, I think, has to be reworked to satisfy the shade ordinances that we have in this city. We have the shade ordinances for a reason, to satisfy proper growing medium for the trees there. And it always comes down to, we need the parking spaces. So let's give a variance. Let's kind of waive the size of the planter areas. Let's put in tree diamonds, something inadequate for a tree, so we get the proper parking spaces. It doesn't come down to parking spaces and trees. You've got ordinances that handle that. It comes down to the size of the building. It's pretty simple. Do the math up front. If you've got to eliminate a few rooms, do that. Instead, it gets moved along forward. And then it comes down to parking spaces versus trees. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Next, please.
My name is Homer Alexander. I'm not going to address whether this project is compatible to the city's plans and ordinances, but rather how this new hotel will benefit everyone in the community. On any given night, there are approximately 880 motel rooms available in Morro Bay. These additional 83 rooms will increase the availability by a little less than 10%. Based on the numbers from the city's tourism division, transient occupancy pass tax contributed last year by just the motels was a little less than $2.7 million. All of this money goes to the general fund. Simple math suggests this new motel will generate an additional revenue of somewhere between $250,000 and $300,000 each year. Because the new motel is new, just off of Highway 1, and as previously mentioned, might be nationally branded, the potential revenue increase could even be greater. If the city's going to continue to offer the services that the community has come to expect, especially those provided by our public safety departments, general fund revenue must grow, at a minimum, at the same rate as employees' personnel costs. This is especially challenging considering the demands from CalPERS to decrease the city's unfunded pension liability. Based on the most recent forecast, the annual increase in the general fund personnel costs over the next 5 years is projected to be about $230,000 each year. The additional TOT dollars that this new motel will generate will go a long way to keeping pace with those increases. I also think that it's terrific that a Morro Bay family has enough faith in the economic future of our city that they are willing to make such a significant investment. If I'm not mistaken, the largest investment by a private entity in the last 40 years. I hope that you will use whatever authority you have as a commission to help this applicant move this project as proposed through the planning, through the permitting process as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Would anybody else like to speak? Okay. Kathy, would you step forward? I'm sure we have some questions for you. Michael, do you want to start on this? Okay.
Kathy, can you? One thing I noticed as well, with the average grade at 20.74 and the building at 23, where are you making up the 3 feet from the road to the, where's that 3 feet being made up?
You know what, I'll probably defer to the architect and the engineer when it gets to technical okay. stuff, because it'd probably be easier for the, you know, I can probably help answer, but it'd
okay.
be better.
Sure, go ahead. Come forward, please.
It might be in a drive, or it may be something, but it just strikes me, I'm not sure where that average, I assume the average grade is actually lower than that at the street, because I think you're raising as you go up toward the high school away from there.
Tom, I got my point right here.
Hi, good evening. I'm Tom Jess with Era Studio Architects. I'm the architect for the project, and I will do my best to answer this, but Matt Walsh, the civil engineer, is also here, and he can talk to more specifics if it gets down to that. But the natural site is lower. It's depressed down, and that's where the average natural grade is taken from. In order to get drainage on the site, in order to bring it up to the correct elevation, it is raising it up. And that's just across the site in general. We're not proposing to do any mounds or anything along those
so
lines.
So you've got the drainage pond in the front mm-hmm. toward Atascadero Road. So I'm imagining that you're sort of making a plateau then that I imagine tails off to the sides and then drains down toward that pond.
Correct.
More or less. But you're largely right. making up that difference in the Atascadero Road.
Yeah, I mean, 3 feet over that distance isn't a significant slope.
No,
it's a very shallow slope.
I knew what you were trying to do with that.
Correct.
And then, can you talk a little bit about the utilities that are across that private road that's there in the site plan now? Looks to me like you're setting the building up basically because of the utility lines that go across.
Well, we pulled the building as far back as we could, not because of the utility lines, but to minimize that view blockage issue.
So are they being undergrounded?
Which ones are being underground? You want to go ahead? I'll let him talk about utilities.
Good evening, Chairman and Commissioners. I'm Matt Walsh, a registered civil engineer working with the consulting team. So for one, there are existing overhead lines within an easement as well as public sewer main in that corridor that you've identified. The overhead lines are planned to be undergrounded, and the sewer public main is planned to be protected in place.
So is that one pole that we see with the transformers on it, is that remaining and that's where you're starting the undergrounding, or are you going to underground up the side of the easement where you've got other lines going up?
The pole adjacent to the Caltrans right-of-way would be the one to remain, and then the overhead lines across the property to the next pole on the high school
to the
property.
West. Okay.
Yeah.
You're going to underground those.
Right.
Okay. And then you must work with Caltrans a lot. Can you do that tree pattern along their right-of-way and get that kind of coverage that you're talking about?
There's a pretty extensive setback between the traveled way for Caltrans off-ramp and the property line. Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to interfere with the other lines. I mean, PG&E's cutting down trees everywhere. As long as they still have some money, they're cutting down trees. I mean, I want to just make sure that we're not thinking we're going to get it. My trouble is it's hard for me to look at the issue without getting into comment. It looks like the trees are pretty close to the property line, and I want to make sure we can maintain those things.
Right. And in moving forward, I'd be working with the landscape architect on what mature canopies those would look like and kind of proximity to those overhead lines as well.
And then you want to talk a little bit about how you're storing the rainwater underground, the runoff?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you can see near the front of the site, in that open space landscape area between the proposed Class 1 trail and the parking lot, that's a majority of our open space for bioretention basin area. Mm-hmm. Intent of that is for encouraging infiltration of the stormwater into the ground, recharge groundwater, because groundwater basins are so critical these days in the regional board's eyes.
And that's the kind that you don't have to fence. There's no standing water in there such
correct.
That you have to fence that.
Yeah, okay. Mainly for infiltration. So okay. Ideally, we're draining that within 24 hours, no standing water. And then another element to the project that Kathy did mention are pervious pavers, and that's another item that would encourage infiltration with a rock layer below that pervious paver layer for additional groundwater recharge.
And I guess because you're the civil, you understand the at least this end of the table appears pretty much a tree hugger for those trees at the high school. And it's going to absolutely be critical, I would think, if the project moves forward, that the proposers understand those mm-hmm. trees are very sacred. and you can't, it looks like you're really pushing toward the edge of the property line. So things like root treatments and things like that, one mm-hmm. form of public benefit would be to propose the project such that those trees are satisfactorily and maintained, have a capacity to stay as nice as they are for as long as they have left. I mean, they're quite mature, but I guess that's all I have for you, but mm-hmm. I have questions for your colleagues.
Before you go, follow up on your retention basins. Have you looked into rainwater harvesting so that you could some of that is reuse instead of just perking back into the soil using those instead of drainage basins underneath, using them as cisterns to allow for reuse of the rainwater under the landscaping?
We initially took a look at that, and to be honest, I worked throughout California, and many projects, even LEED Platinum projects, are finding the storage time to hold that and actually use it from the winter month to get it to the summer month, and the additional maintenance cost of cleaning cisterns mm-hmm. of that size out becomes cost prohibitive. So a lot of my clients throughout California are taking a look at it, but the technology for them is not encouraging them from a feasibility standpoint to really go after it.
Okay, and then to tie back on to, I'm sorry, Michael, but the paving, mm-hmm. as far as the pervious paving and basically pavers where those cypress are, would that enhance the, along the high school border, mm-hmm. would that enhance the viability of those cypress trees? And right now you have asphalt.
Right. Yeah, it would, and an additional thing we did take a look at on initial site planning was to basically create some notches. You can see it pretty well on L-1 sheet in your packets. We pulled some of those parking spaces away from that perimeter boundary line. The trunks of those trees are roughly 10 to 15 feet from property line, and we took a look at the canopies to try to encourage the site to step away away from those tree canopies to encourage, you know, the health of those trees during construction and in perpetuity.
Okay. And you're not required to underground all of that, the, what is it, the 15 kV line that's on the east side of the property, adjacent to your property, or is that in the Caltrans setback? It didn't show on the site plans where those were located.
Right. At this point in our conversations with Public Works, the undergrounding, the intent for the project at this point, the undergrounding was to occur at that utility corridor.
So mostly along the south side.
Right, the south side that bisects the site.
Okay. Okay, those are the follow-up questions I had from Michaels. Are you...
Oh, no, I'm not done.
Okay, good.
These are more architect questions, though. And I'm just going to assume that the 83 units is some kind of target from pro forma that the brander is interested in. Is
83 is a fairly low number for a branded hotel.
Okay.
It would be ideal to be higher than that, but that's not what we're proposing here.
Can you tell me, just because I'm not familiar with how it's done, what the floodproofing does to things like your entrance doors? Are they going to have the appearance that they really have here, or what happens?
They do. So there's two different types of floodproofing. There's wet floodproofing and dry floodproofing. Wet floodproofing is where you allow the water into the space, and that's the type of floodproofing that requires the flood-resistant materials, where everything has to be concrete, utilities have to be elevated above that elevation. Mm-hmm. In San Luis Obispo, all of downtown is in a floodplain. So, for example, we're doing the Hotel Sarah right now that's under construction where the old Slow Brew used to be. Mm-hmm. And that garage on the ground floor is wet floodproof. So mm-hmm. it's entirely concrete. The water's allowed to flood through. All of the businesses in downtown San Luis Obispo are within a floodplain and are dry floodproofed. Mm-hmm. You can walk by them and no one notices the floodgate slots. If you ever do, I like to point it out to people when I'm walking or to employees or someone, but every building down there that's been built in the last 20 years is dry floodproofed, okay. and they look just like normal buildings. So okay. what it is you're required to put up floodgates at mm-hmm. any opening so that that's below that floodplain elevation, the BFE plus 2 feet in this case. So a floodgate would be stored on site. It would have some type of method of attachment, whether it be a channel that it slides into, a gasketed type of fitting that fits through there, mm-hmm. or whether there's female studs in the wall that the bolts would go into. There's a number of scenarios, but it does not affect the actual visual appearance of the buildings.
Okay. And then are we to assume that the branding includes the flat roof? Aesthetic package, does that include a flat roof?
I don't think it necessarily has to. In this okay. case, we propose
it. Does it include the brick?
The brick that's on the ground floor? No, not necessarily. I mean, we have flexibility in the architectural design mm-hmm. In some capacity. I mean, obviously, the layout of the rooms and the requirements inside the space. What we did is, this isn't a stock elevation by any stretch. I mean, this isn't, you can't drive by here and see a Holiday Inn Express that looks like this, or a Hampton Inn, or a Traveler's Lodge, or, I mean, whatever branded hotel you're looking at, you're not going to find one that looks like this. What we tried to do was design a hotel that's responsive to the local location. That's how the site plan was derived. That's how the parking was derived. That's how the building was pushed back to minimize that impact. It was moving the basin in the front. I mean, it's an entirely specific design for this site.
And at one point, I thought you said the pool was porcelain?
The panels? Pool is, I'm sorry, porcelain?
Porcelain panels? Did I hear that?
No, the pool is, I think Kathy referenced the pool as being an indoor pool as opposed to an outdoor pool.
Okay.
But it's a standard pool. There was one comment raised, and I just wanted to address it, that there was a comment raised about the visual appearance of the height of that telephone pole relative to the building. And I think that the biggest distinction you want to make there is that we're actually comparing apples to oranges, because the visual simulation that was presented with the driving through was from the freeway, which is a much higher elevation. The perspective view that we generated was from street level at Atascadero Road. So so naturally, the pool is going to appear higher when you're at a lower elevation.
Yeah, I'll save that for comments. It just struck me that when I saw the simulation, I drive that every day myself around that area. I'm around that intersection quite a bit. It struck me that when I look at the section that was shown relative to the floor levels of the building, it looked to me like the Route 1 section, road section, is somewhere in the second floor plane, second floor zone. And it looked like in the rendering that it was more in the third floor, which suggests to me the rendering might be off by 5 to 8 feet. And that struck me as maybe it was set up on the whatever the floodplain line was, rather than the natural grade which is being raised, or with the existing grade instead of the grade being raised up to where you're saying the floor plate is.
Gotcha. And I think what could be the determining is that the elevation of the freeway through there, or Highway 1 through there, isn't a consistent height.
No, changes.
So if you took it closer to the intersection, it would be higher than as you go further away, because it's ramping to go over the intersection. So it could be some interpretation between the two of those.
Okay. Well, that's all my questions. Thanks.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
I'd like to interject one question here. On the elevation heights, is on this item?
Yeah.
Was that elevation there, is that for the top of the architectural blade, or is that the top of the parapet?
It's the top of the parapet.
So we have another foot and a half for the blade height
for just that blade, which is an architectural projection above the main roof. But the point of that section was to show that the building is a consistent height. It's basically 32 foot 8 inches, and it just depends on where you measure the height relative to the building and how high we're forced to put the building because of the floodplain. So, that was the point of it, trying to clarify it, because it got really confusing when we were crunching really numbers.
Okay. Richard, do you?
When you guys raised the elevation, aren't you creating a drainage issue in the high school when you raised that? And by the bike park, by the bike route that goes in the back?
We are not. No, we're not changing the finished grade at the trees, which is basically the barrier between us. The trees and the parking adjacent to it are at the same elevation. It's over the distance of a parking stall, a drive aisle, a parking stall to get up to that elevation. We're able to drain it, and then the whole site drains down to that basin.
Okay, and then the basins, could you explain to me how, from a mechanical standpoint or a fluid dynamic standpoint, it's basically, a hole with a bunch of rocks, and it's going to, what does it look like?
I would imagine that you drive by bioswales and basins, and you go by them all day long, and you never notice. It's just a depressed landscaped area.
Okay.
And so what it's done is it's depressed landscaping. There's other stuff that's done below the soil to allow it to perk.
Yeah.
You know that, but you don't see that.
Right.
So, and then when the landscape architect selects the plantings, he selects plantings that can withstand being underwater for a day or two or whatever it happens to be. But it literally just looks like a regular landscaped area that happens to be slightly depressed. It's not like one of those big basins with the steep sides and a fence around it. That's not what we're proposing. What we're proposing is it looks much more like a natural feature of the landscape.
And then where your drainage basin, where is it in relation to the sewer main that comes across your property?
I think that, Matt, is it?
It's south of it.
By how many?
It's
40 feet.
40 feet south of the sewer line that runs through there.
Okay. That's it for now.
Okay. Jesse?
I think the only question I have is related to the BFE and the FEMA requirements. So obviously this building would require flood insurance. The difference in flood insurance, I mean, I'm assuming there's a difference if you're building below the BFE plus 2 to what's proposed. Is that a significant difference, or can you comment on that, or is that something you guys have analyzed?
I have not analyzed the the flood insurance implications of this. However, most of the time, the way flood insurance or just insurance require is that if you're in compliance with the requirements, and if the city has an ordinance that allows a modification of the FEMA standards or whatever the BFE plus two standards would be, then we're in compliance with the standards because we're within the city and we're within their requirements.
I see.
I've got two subject questions. So the first one is, as I recall, there's a fencing on the roof to conceal various utilities up there. What would be the dimension of that space, both the height, width, length?
Well, first off, the equipment would be located in the center of the roof so that it's less visual impact. And this type of hotel, the way that it's set up, there's very little equipment on the roof. There's no big package units up there to do the guest rooms. The only units that are providing HVAC for the is for the common area. So there might be two or three total on the entire roof. So it'd be a very small area. And then there was another comment about green building features, and that's one thing. Sorry, to answer your question as accurately as I can, I would think that it would be somewhere in the range of 20 feet by 40 feet, something like that, on the roof.
And the height of the screening?
Maybe 4 to 5 feet, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
And located in the center of the roof, as I mentioned.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The goal is to keep the vast majority of the roof open for solar panels.
Right.
And that's one of the benefits of this type of construction is that the flat roof's very conducive for right. that.
And then the other question might not be for you because it concerns landscape. Should I ask?
Yeah, please. We don't have the landscape architect's not here, so I might be your best source.
So the trees that are close up to the building on the eastern facing side, and the trees mm-hmm. that are on the periphery. So the side of the building you would see from the highway. What's the estimated height at maturity, and how long would it take for those trees to become mature?
We're in the tree canopy is expected to reach maturity or a full height at 8 to 10 years, and I don't know the exact heights. There's a table on here that likely has it, but to be honest, after I turn 45, 47, I can't see it anymore.
They seem to be depicted at almost or at the height of the building. These look like pretty substantial trees. I just wanted to confirm.
Correct. And in a 32-foot tall building, it would be reasonable to expect the trees to be at least that high.
Good. That's it.
Okay. What methodology of construction are you going to be using in this? Is this going to be a component prepackaged, off-site constructed, and then
We would love to do that. However, I don't think it's in the cards for this particular building. I think the building sets up really well for it, and we do a lot of we call it modular uh-huh. construction. The company that we typically work with is out of Idaho. It's called Gurdon, and we just completed one up in South San Francisco. It's a really excellent way to go. The issue is that it has extra height associated with it. So the way that it works is, right now, we're going to be able to build on the slab. With a modular construction, you can't. You need a crawl space below the first floor guest rooms because there's a wood floor underneath there, and you need access mm-hmm. under the wood floor for the plumbing and so forth. So you have to build a depressed slab for that. And then the other thing is, between each floor, each box, and a box is a guest room, a corridor, and a guest room. Each box has a floor and a ceiling, then an airspace, then a floor, and then a ceiling. So you end up with a taller floor-to-floor. One of the things I wanted to point out in this is that we are actually proposing a very modest ceiling height in order to be in compliance or as close to compliance as we can. We're only proposing 8.5-foot ceilings in the guest rooms, which is reasonable, but it's not extravagant by any stretch. I mean, 9 feet would be much preferred, mm-hmm. but we made the accommodation to go to 8'6". And then there was the one comment from staff regarding the height of the lobby and whether or not we could reduce rooms or move the rooms down to the second floor there. The one thing I wanted to say is the approach that we're taking to this is what we feel is a very creative approach to try and minimize the height of the building. An 8'6" ceiling, and I don't want to get too technical, but an 8'6" ceiling, when you have plumbing above it and not plumbing below it, is going to actually be like 7.5 feet because you have to take that plumbing and go horizontally to the next point to bring it down. And a lobby for a hotel like this just would not work with a 7.5-foot ceiling. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just an oppressive ceiling height. So what we did is we eliminated the rooms on the second floor that were over the lobby in order to give us a taller height for the lobby and make the lobby a reasonably impressive and nice entrance point for the guests.
So what kind of mechanical packages are you going to have for the room? Are they going to be a split unit? Or are you going to have a four-pipe system? Or?
What we're proposing right now is a PTAC system. So that's the unit that's integral with the window opening. So the window's okay. There, and then the grills are integral to it. It's not a separate unit down below it. It doesn't stick out from the wall. It's flush with the wall, with the window. And it's an aluminum system that has the window and the grills integral to it. And that would be the guest room system.
So is that a heat pump system, or is that a resistive for the heat?
It's a packaged thermal air conditioner. I don't know the technical, but it's a standalone system. It provides its own fresh air, and it's a through-the-wall type. You know, it has the vent at the window.
My guess is it's a standalone heat pump.
Yeah, that would. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then it probably has resistive heat for
as backup.
Low temperature. Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, it has heat and cooling. And then for the common spaces, what we usually do is a VRF system, which is a very refrigerant system, and that is a very efficient system that relies on the piping for the coolant. There's no duct work running up to the roof to a package unit or anything along those lines.
Okay. So it seems like, you know, you are screened pretty well as a background screen for the northernmost portion of the site. But from my, you know, visual of driving by and seeing the, it seems like the, you know, where you're coming in contact with, you know, visual blockage of the rock and excessive height, visual height, the apparent height is on the south side. And would it still be economically feasible to cut back, basically back to, you know, kind of where that blade is, to the architectural blade, to reduce that south height level on the for the third floor?
I think I might feel that my back of my neck burning from the owner's stare. I think that would be extremely detrimental to. I think it came to five guest rooms is what would be beyond that blade sign on the third floor. That would be. Correct me if I'm wrong. That would be very difficult, to put it mildly.
Okay, so, and then you mentioned previously, I just want to reiterate that the parapet is not a required element, or that you could have alternate treatment for the roof.
We could, but it would likely increase the height of the building. Mm-hmm. You know, what we tried to do was you know, knowing going into this that we're trying to be as sensitive as we can to the height, the parapet's location gets us the lowest building height out of the roofing options.
Okay. And then, once again on the floodplain, by raising the pad of the building, is this going to create an islanding effect that will push the floodwaters further into the high school?
No. So there's a distinction, when you look at the FEMA maps, there's a difference between a floodway and a floodplain. So if you were in a flood way, that would be exactly what you want to do. You don't want to displace any more water, and that's because so the way that's determined is by mass within the flood way. We're not in a flood way. We're in a flood plain. A flood plain is static water, so it does not have that same effect.
Okay. Does anybody else have any further questions on this?
I think I just have one. You mentioned the roof treatment. I guess one of the things that I think is really amazing is the way your neighbor's hotel fits in to what's a very complicated corner, you know, opposite. Mm-hmm. And I think the height to me isn't as much of an issue as the appearance of the box the entire length of the building. And so I appreciate you think it might be higher with another roof, but I think the edge would be lower if you did a pitch that had a truss, that then you might even be able to get some architectural features in the upper story spaces because of the height that you'd have. And I think you might be able to lower the perimeter by a foot or so, because I'm concerned about the length of the parapet with without a lot of differentiation except the blade. And I think the idea of looking at a pitched roof, and I'm the first one to love flat roofs. I mean, this
sure.
the record would stand on its own from here. But I'm a flat roof advocate. But this is one that I really go back and forth, because I'm simultaneously taken every time I look at those poles, how short the building seems compared to what in my mind it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And every time I look at this, it's like, this pole seems like the building's not as long as this is. So I always look at your perspective view that's in here from the south, and I try to understand what it feels like driving down when you don't have those lower level features.
Mm-hmm.
And that puts the emphasis on what the edge of that parapet is. And that's why I think the sloped roof, maybe with a metal roof or something on it that gives you the interior benefit of articulation for the spaces, might actually be something that would be received better, even though you might actually have a slightly higher roof.
Well, I think that this is exactly the right form for this. So if with that feedback, what initially came to mind is the comment about how we're screened well on the north, but the south is where we're most sensitive. Perhaps we can explore an option where we do a sloped roof in conjunction with the flat roof, maybe at the most where at the front location of the building, where we want to keep it as low as we possibly can, and not just visually low, but actually low, because it's potentially impacting the view. But maybe we can incorporate it down further, and the overall height of the building might change a little bit if we measure the top of the sloped roof. The eave will be a little bit less, but we can get some of that variation across that elevation.
Yeah, because one of the things I wanted to say too. Are we doing comments or questions?
I think we're moving on comments, yeah.
The one thing I want to say is I appreciate that there's no frou-frou on this. There's mm-hmm. no kitsch on this. There's no mermaids. There's no dolphins. You know, I can't tell you how the understated. I appreciate that. But I do think you could go a step further and look at some of the more industrial package that's here with the metals and things like mm-hmm. that, as opposed to the brick. And you know, we've had people come through here in the last year with Corten steel for paneling on the homes and things like that. And I think there's an appreciation of the fact that we are a working waterfront, that those are the real things on the boats that mm-hmm. I think could start coming up into the buildings. So instead of making them look more like another building, make them more like the pallet that's here that stood mm-hmm. the test of time through the way those materials work with this area. But my biggest concern is the way the one-story elements in the south elevation, the south three-dimensional study, all look good. I just wonder what their efficacy is when you're on the highway looking down on the pool roof, looking into that second and third floor when it's so plain across there. And it could be the color. I'm not sure. But I think that white band at the top is the thing. That's the biggest detrimental thing I have. I think the cypress trees provide a limit already that people to the east aren't going to have their view blocked by this, because the cypress trees already block it. I think it's inevitable that some project is going to go here and block the view through the cypress trees. And I was actually stunned. I'll say that word. I don't get stunned very often. I'm a very cynical person. But I was stunned when I saw the poles that far back and how generous the front yard toward Atascadero Road is, knowing that that's going to have a bioswale in it. I think it's a great feature, and the bikeway, I think, is a good thing. And I think it is a good gateway project. And I think you're quite a bit along the way there. It sounds like the high school has no concern about the use. My kids went to that high school. I asked them about it, and they didn't think it would have any impact. I think there's some concerns there. The traffic is already a disaster, but some of that's the nature of that intersection, not so much this project. When the high school is moving into session and leaving session, it's nobody goes there. You just bypass it.
And what's the timing for the roundabout?
Well, that's a good question to ask Scott. I think there's some other projects involving the roundabout as well. But
I think you may have a contribution to that.
Yeah, I think that's probably a factor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is a conceptual plan. So we've moved into. So I think this is allowing, you know, a little back and forth here, so mm-hmm. that we can get a good feeling. So you guys can get a feeling of where we sit, and we can get a good feeling of what's appropriate too. So, Jesse, do you want to?
I think overall I like what I see. I think there's going to be, well, I know there's going to be a ton of public comment that comes after this. But overall, I think I like what I see. So,
excellent.
Okay.
I always, in this situation, I'm particularly glad that Commissioner Lucas has spoken first about the architectural design, because I always value what he has to say and his opinions. And I, for one, have no formal or informal training in architecture. But I will say this. So the elements that I noticed were the flat roof and the articulation of the vertical masses, essentially by color, and a certain uniformity or repetitiveness in the design. And I was thinking, I find those elements very often attractive in modern architecture at a certain scale, but I think, given the larger scale of this project, that those design elements need some modification, and I'll leave it to other experts as to how that modification should occur, but I'm not quite satisfied as an amateur with the look of this because the building is so large. Second thing, now, with respect to the shade element in the parking lot, and I'm going to set aside the issue of whether there's sufficient number of parking spaces to accommodate the guests and other people who might be wanting to use the charging system. It strikes me that there's really two elements. One is physics, the amount of shade, and there's one of aesthetics as well that are incorporated into our city ordinance. In terms of the shading aspect, the presentation is fairly opaque, and to be frank, it was a little difficult for me to understand, but I suspect that the amount of shade produced by the applicant's proposal is not equivalent to the amount of shade that would be produced if we adhered strictly to the city ordinance. I think in terms of aesthetics, and having more trees in the parking lot in position differently, it's sort of indisputable that from an aesthetic standpoint, to follow the city's ordinance would be more aesthetically pleasing. Now, and I understand that the reason to do this is quite practical. You've got to create more parking spaces. But I'm mindful that by reducing the size of the structure, you could create more parking spaces. In terms of the view shed, and this I find really interesting. Again, as an amateur, I find the impact on the view is really sort of not to be disputed. There is some impact on the view, but it becomes a matter of how much. That's a matter of opinion, subjective. And then it quickly descends into kind of a cost-benefit analysis. But I'm also thinking that the view is not simply a view of the water or the rock. It's also a view of sky, trees, or negatively, it's a view of a fairly large vertical structure. Okay, so that view is impacted. The final issue, the more dicey issue, is the height. I sincerely appreciate the difficulties that you're faced with in trying to create a three-story structure in this locale. But I find it unavoidable that also might indicate that in this particular situation, that difficulty indicates that a three-story structure might not be suitable for that piece of property precisely because of those difficulties. And you know, we're being asked we're being asked to make an exception to the 30-foot limitation. I realize you could put a different interpretation on that because this is a planned development. But nevertheless, we are all very much aware that height limitation is one of the most, if not the most, emotionally held provisions in the code among the residents of the city. Most of the people in the city really care about observing that limitation, and then we have to think about if we move from that limitation in this situation, what are the reasons and what sort of precedent are we establishing for another large commercial project? Those are my concerns. So now I move on to the benefit cost analysis, and so I see you know, a loss of shade and aesthetics in the parking lot. I see, although that's not to be yet determined, a loss of viewship, and I see us having to make an exception to the 30-foot height limitation in the most general sense. And the benefits, of course, it's interesting. The benefits are, yes, the bike path and certainly the charging station. And to be honest, there's a significant economic investment in the community, which is much needed. And there's probably a sizable amount of city revenues to be had from this, although, you know, not presented in your application. Nevertheless, it's there. But I don't know how to evaluate that at this venue. I'm not even quite sure we should take that into consideration. And without any data as to what it even is, I don't really want to consider that at this time. So if I try to weigh those two things, I think at this point I have to say that the presentation, I can't approve this.
Ted? Richard?
I'm just going to be pretty straightforward here. When I look at this building, I see Irvine, not Morro Bay. And I don't think that neighborhood compatibility or the compatibility for what Morro Bay is looking for is, and you know, just looking at it on a scale there. I think that the massing and the sizing of that hotel for this area is way over what can be looked at and handled. And when I look at the public benefits, you know, one of the public, you know, to me, if you guys are putting in EV chargers and stuff, that's a marketing tool for your business, for your hotel, more so than a public benefit. We had a project recently that we looked at Flippo's, putting in a EV station there. That would have been more of a public benefit. Over here, it's for the hotel, you know, for the people that are renting the hotel. I, you know, just listening to Michael with the roofing kind of ideas, I'm receptive to that. Like maybe something like that. The other thing is the bike lane. I ride that bike lane all the time, and the bike lane I look at is something that, you know, I could appreciate what you guys are doing there, but it's kind of works right now, okay? And to me, a public benefit for a project of this size would be if you a while back, maybe 8 years ago, we were looking at a wastewater treatment plant remodel there at the existing treatment plant. And one of the issues was the height for that remodel to the Coastal Commission. That was a big deal, but also the drainage and also the fact that you're in a flood zone. And you know, there was talk about re-crowning the road to handle the drainage properly. That would be a public benefit to me, like doing Atascadero Road to address the flooding issues that are going to be more and more prevalent with climate change as we go forward. Because, you know, I'm assuming you're looking at the FEMA maps of a few years ago and those things, right? Am I right? The FEMA maps are maybe back in 2012 or 13, something around there. I think, yeah, they were updated there. So those kind of things, you know, are changing as we speak. But I just on the face of it, and you know, Cindy, you mentioned that there was like no visual impact from going north, and I wasn't quite as safe as you were with your camera because I was actually driving, and took about, you know, 20 shots there, and there is a significant impact, and the impact, I think, Joe, you said it best. It's not a question of if it is an impact or if you're traveling 60 miles an hour. There is. Now it's like how much value we're going to put on it. And then from the south, if you're going down, right now we have, you know, the current general plan, we say we're a tree city, right? We have the tree line for the high school, you know, the Monterey Pines. You could see that. This is all going to be, you know, changed. So I personally, I don't see that the design fits in with Morro Bay. It more of a rustic or more of a, I don't know what the name I'm looking for, but something a little bit
sure,
less metropolitan, I guess, you know.
Sure. Okay. And I can appreciate that, and I appreciate your frankness as well. And I think that that's something that would be of huge value to us as the applicant and to Mr. Patel as the property, you know, as the owner of the project that would be making this type of investment. And that's essentially what the purpose of this conceptual review level is. It's really what we're proposing and the items that staff presented, which were the areas where we're not in compliance with the strict interpretation of the code, and we're relying on the PD overlay zone to accommodate the height, the parking diamonds, and so forth. The design, what we're really looking for is feedback from you saying, like, yes, this is something we can work with, or no, take a hike and, you know, go somewhere else. I mean, to be completely blunt, that's really what would be the most value to us at this point. The items that we talked about, the roof slope, the materiality, the look of the building, those are all items we can work with you and happily work with you. I mean, we want to be a good neighbor. We want to have a building that fits into the community. We want a building that reflects the historical character of this neighborhood. I mean, that's only going to benefit us. It's going to benefit you. It's going to benefit the community. And I think you'll find that we're tremendously open to doing that. But the items regarding the height, the parking spaces, and the public benefits, those are the items that really would be do or die, essentially, you know, make or break for the project. There's room to make modifications in the look and feel of the building, but if you came back and you said we need to do a two-story building, we just would say thank you, but no thank you. If you come back and you say we need to add a parking space or take away a parking space and get some shading in there, maybe we can work with that. I mean, I'm sure we can. The other thing I wanted to point out is that our parking study or our shade study is really not very accurate. And the reason it's not accurate is we're not counting the shade from the trees between us and the neighborhood, I mean, between us and the school. We're not counting the shade from that. We're not counting the shade from the building. We're literally pretending these trees are little trees out in the middle of a sea of parking. So there's actually a lot more shade on that parking lot than the shade study accommodates. And maybe what we could do is we can do a shade, you know, feedback from council could be something like, you know, you're not showing enough. The trees with the diamond planters don't give us the shade that we want. However, your study is not accurate because it doesn't accommodate these other elements. Provide a shading study that shows the true shading on the parking lot. And if it doesn't meet the requirement, put the planters in to meet the requirement. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. We're just having some back and forth with the conceptual review.
Okay, thanks. Are you finished?
One of the things that you mentioned as far as they were talking about heat island effect. Mm-hmm. For me personally, we're not dealing with an urban heat zone like we are in, like people are in mm-hmm. Wilmington and mm-hmm. Compton. You know, this is Morro Bay. We have a little bit things, so it's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. However, we are a tree city. You know. Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Okay, there were a few things that I'd like to comment on this too. You know, one, I'm aware of the financial benefits to the city.
And so, you know, those are not, we don't deal with that here, and we can't really consider that here. But we do have, you know, some, I mean, we do deal with height limitation zoning and mm-hmm. and that. And on this case, we do have to deal with aesthetics and neighborhood compatibility. I talked to several people and I showed them the plans to get there before I said anything. And the first comment I heard from everyone was, their initial comment was, well, that doesn't look like Morro Bay. And those words were consistent across, you know, everybody that I showed this to. And that was my first impression, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe a slope roof, maybe, you know, a little more articulation in materials as far as a little more, you know, true materials instead of, you know, smooth stucco might help that, you know, especially with the white. And that south east corner is where I have the biggest problem with the visual impact on the height. And that's so basically the south side, but especially that southeast corner. So I think your apparent height is as important as your actual height. And with the parapet and with the white banding that it creates and the white, you know, consistent facade that it creates, gives you a much stronger apparent height than you would with a sloped roof on that. Mm-hmm. And that would allow you to add another material that would basically could help soften that aesthetically and visually. The other thing is on the so that southeast corner is real problematic for me. Your height studies also show to the parapet height, not to the blade height. So that kind of raised the hackles on the back of my neck.
We don't want to raise any hackles.
Yeah. So, you know, so it gets you into a mindset of, okay, what else should I look for?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, just for a little bit of consistency, this may be petty, but it's, you know, your site plans and your plan presentation should all be facing the same way. Instead of flipping back and forth, it makes it hard for some people that are not used to reading plans to follow.
Well, it makes it really hard for people that are used to reading plans.
Yeah. So, you know, be consistent with that. The landscape palette that was chosen, I don't think is appropriate at all for this environment. You know, for this, you know, the trees are nice and pretty flowering trees, which, you know, I don't think would work in a marine environment. I would suggest more the Monterey cypress and the coastal oaks rather than, you know, flowering perfume trees or whatever, you know,
sure.
Whatever they were. And I think for me to convey a height variance for this, you know, I would like, you know, I would think that we would need more public benefit than what was here. I'm extremely grateful for the EV fast chargers, but in our new LCP and GP, we're going to be requiring level 2 chargers at one per 10. So, you know, that benefit, I appreciate it, but it's also not, is going to be required in future plans as soon as our GP and LCP gets approved. So I don't see that as a benefit, but I see the fast charger as a benefit. Although I, you know, time and time again, I say that the best location for the fast chargers are on the Embarcadero because that's where it'll create the most business. But that is those are a benefit for the building and for the business. Mm-hmm. And it's also a benefit for the greenhouse gas emissions, and our biggest contributor is automobiles. So I appreciate that, but I think there, you know, the package that brings forward, I think needs to have a lot more environmental benefits for the city and a few more offsetting benefits that people can point to and say, okay, this is worth blocking part of our view for, because we're going to, you know, we're going to enjoy these for this for the next 50 years that this building is going to be in use. So
just as an option, is public art, would that be considered a public benefit?
End of the dais.
No.
I would have to be convinced, you know, but I'm just one of five up here.
Okay.
So the meeting rooms, I think, you know, I appreciate having them here would be helpful in this city, but I don't, once again, that's more a private than a public benefit, you know. Basically it's, you know, this won't fly. It has potential, but for me it needs more work and more thought put into it. And I appreciate what you've done. And I do like, I like the aesthetics and I like the plan, but I just don't like them here.
Gotcha.
You know.
So I guess, is it fair to make an assumption that at least some of the board members, or the majority of the commission members, sorry, not board members, yeah, the commission members feel that there's a path forward with this? Or is there, where if we ramp up the public benefit?
So I'm going to interject right now.
Yeah.
we're not here to form consensus.
No.
We're here for you to provide individual input, not to form consensus related to this. So be very careful as you make your comments. You were doing a good job up until the point the applicant unfortunately asked the question. I'm sorry for interrupting, by the way.
Okay.
I don't want to go down that road because this isn't a public hearing. It wasn't agendized as such. So giving your individual input is perfect.
Okay.
Continue to do so.
I retract my question.
Although he asked a very pertinent question, so if there's anything any of you would like to reiterate on your own, that would be appropriate.
Okay. So, Jesse,
you know, I was real brief in my comments, and I really didn't have it formulated in my head. So, kind of hearing everybody else talk, what you're looking for from us today is, would we support the height? Would we support basically the site plan we see? Conceptually, I mean, obviously, this isn't close to what we would end up approving had we, you know, if this were a hearing. This isn't the architectural. This isn't the color palette. This isn't the finished product. So I was kind of coming at it from that perspective. So obviously we would be massaging this all the way through this process. I just wanted to reiterate conceptually, for me, this is close.
Okay.
That's what I wanted to make sure we're on the same page. So.
Okay. Joseph?
Well, I'm remembering your words as to what might be a deal breaker in terms of the number of rooms and the height of the building. And upon hearing that, I was thinking to myself, well, that piece of property is only going to become more valuable and more desirable and looked at by more enterprises going forward. So I would say that in the hope that there might be some compromises that are really substantive rather than purely substantive compromises.
Richard?
You mean me?
I'm
Commissioner Lohr. I'm not afraid of the 30 feet per se. I think this is one of my favorite zones in the city to envision what can happen. If I'm on the other side of the high school, it's dead, because 30 feet blocks views up and down the coast and things like that. This is in a trough between what's basically an interstate and a giant stand of trees. There's nobody to the north. There's really nobody to the south that this should have any impact on. It doesn't impact the views of the people east of the highway. If this was on one of our sites on our residential zone or our commercial zone on the other side of Route 1, we've had many meetings here about the same type of thing because of the views it blocks in the immediate neighborhood. So in this particular site, I don't have a concern so much about the 30 feet per se. I share some of Commissioner Luer's concern about the southeast corner, but you can't, you have to look at, this is one of the few places in California, were you to appeal, or if this would be denied and somebody would take it to the Coastal Commission, the Coastal Commission is going to say, this is one of the few coastal access beach block locations in California. You should be building visitor serving commercial here to the highest level. And so I'm very aware of what Mr. Alexander said, and I'm very aware of the legacy of this block and what the potential of it is. And I like that somebody's bringing forward a project of this magnitude. And I can certainly say that I think you're close to having something here that I could support.
I'm going to respectfully disagree with you, Michael, as far as the height goes. I think that that's something that we have to be very sensitive to, and a view shed. And I recognize that where it is, but I think that the massing is a bit much. And I understand your break points, but this is an opportunity to have something in Morro Bay here that is, that can be a little smaller and can still work, in my opinion. And and as far as the architecture, I think it needs to be different. But
a
I think
less
that
Irvine.
There's, I think that revisiting the amount of, like, the parking spaces, and I think one of the speakers mentioned something too. It's like everybody's putting these tiny parking spaces in, and you have a truck or something, it's problematic. But I think that it could be a little bit less mass, and I think you could maybe still make it work.
Okay, Jesse, go ahead.
One more thing here. So, I mean, as the Planning Commission, we are here to find the highest and best use for this property that we can, and we can get the community to support. So I think it's incumbent upon us to do that. And I think Commissioner Lucas hit it right on the head that we need to remind the community that this is going to be a great investment in the community. It's going to provide, maybe you guys can spitball on how many head of household jobs this type of investment might provide. We're going to be having that many more visitors able to stay on a busy weekend, using or patronizing our facilities, our grocery stores, our restaurants. So we do have to look at that. I mean, I heard a couple comments that maybe that's not the purpose of this commission, but I believe it is. I believe it is for us to plan and the big picture kind of look at what we are supposed to be doing here, and I think that's exactly what we're supposed to be doing here. So,
okay. So, did you get the tone?
I did, and I think that, to be honest, I really appreciate the comments and the time and effort that you guys and the thought that you put into this. I think it gives us a lot of direction, and it sounds like Kathy might have a couple.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for your presentation on that.
Just a couple things. One, I'd like to clear up one little misconception about the parking space size. These are standard size city-regulated parking spaces with the allowable number of compact spaces allowed by city code. So they're not extra small parking spaces to begin with. They are the standard size. Just want to make sure that we got that one on. And there was some back and forth about public benefits, and staff and I have talked about public benefits for this project for the past several months, and I think we all kind of struggled a little bit of trying to come up with a package that we thought that the Planning Commission might like to see with public benefits. And I think the guidance with staff on the EV chargers, that was something that they recommended in anticipation that knowing that moving forward the city was going to make the EV chargers a standard thing. But we're ahead of the ball game here, so we figured that was something that would be important. And then of course the class one bike lane. We tried to figure out other things. We looked at an idea of a welcome to Morro Bay sign, like I said in my presentation. but we really couldn't find a location that we thought was suitable. And, you know, when the roundabout goes in, you know, if this was going in at the same time of the roundabout, then we might consider something there. But staff, I don't think, saw any other location that we could put something like that. So any other feedback that you have for specifics on public benefits that we can consider, we are certainly open to suggestions because we've all been trying to struggle with ideas and come up with something. So if you have any comments on that, we would love to hear them.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Can I add one or two things? The one thing I would say is, and you know, because I had two students at Morro Bay High, you know, I'm particularly sensitive to the people who think this is going to add danger to the walking students as well as the driving students. But any, I would say, in dialogue with the high school, if since they're a major stakeholder here and they tend to not show up at meetings or have, you know, concerns, but that they express to us. I would say that's a big thing to say, is that you talk to the high school and they said by doing this we would help the student movement across the site or something like that, or by doing this we've helped the students enter and exit parallel to our facility in a smarter way. I think that has a lot of impact on the community to help be a good neighbor, because it is a bit of adding density to an already difficult part of, you know, even whatever your transportation study says, you're very aware as a resident here, this is a really mm-hmm. sensitive part of town because of the number of students that are around there. So I'd say that's one thing. And then the minor architectural thing that I didn't say before is part of the project looks like you push the windows in, which then makes the building look heavy. And when you have the canopies come out and shade the windows, first of all, it puts a shade mark on the outside. And I would look at things that project and add shade and things like that to the facade to help animate, especially the south side, because it looks like it's pretty flat compared to the other ones.
Great, thanks. We'll go back to the school district because we did have a nice meeting with them to talk about this idea of the joint driveway to see if that would be feasible. And they said, no, we just can't make it work. But, you know, we've been trying to involve them and trying to get some comments. So I will go back to them again and work on some more.
You know, Kathy, maybe like have these guys do a little presentation with the kids too. You know, you could always get young minds coming up with some interesting solutions at the high school.
Okay, thanks.
So, and Kathy, for me too is, you know, reducing the environmental footprint of the building as much as you can. You know, as far as mechanical systems and, you know, storage. You know, that goes a long way. The fast chargers, I really do appreciate. I consider that a benefit, basically because I drive, you know, my wife drives an electric car. But also, you know, that is one of the greatest greenhouse gas generators for our city. You know, that's the biggest source. You know, the other thing, even something maybe, you know, program for internship for, you know, for some of the kids from the high school into the hospitality industry, you know, working with the, you know, maybe there are shop classes that, you know, for mechanical systems or something like that too, you know, trying to integrate it in with the high school and in with the kids, you know, they're better minds than me that can work something like that out. But, you know, being innovative like that, I think would be great.
Great.
Okay, so I hope you have a list of things to work on, and thank you very much for your presentation. And I do like this conceptual review process.
Yeah, it's great, and like we said, you know, it works out great when we can discuss things with the Planning Commission and ideas and go back and forth rather than being limited to, you know, specifics in a specific amount of time and in a formal hearing. So I think that's, you know, really encouraging, so we know what, and we'll go back and work with staff more on this too and have more discussions. We've had a lot of discussions so far and with the city engineer and everything, so we'll continue that process. So thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you, and I hope we can come to, you know, agreement on this. Okay, thanks everybody for that. And then here we have the next item is unfinished business, and we have none. Do we have Planning Commissioner comments?
Yeah, I just want to say that it's been an honor, really an honor to be on the commission with you guys. especially my East Coast friend here. teaching, you're a good teacher, brother. And and also our staff. Cindy, always good job. Scott, I've said it before. I think that, you know, Pismo's loss is moral base gain, and I mean that, you know. And I hope to maybe speak in public comment, maybe before you guys, but thank you guys for the opportunity.
Yeah. I want to say the same thing. We're losing a good member here, and I value your opinion very greatly. And please do comment on public comments. I do value your opinion very much, and thank you for your service.
I'd be honest. I'm saddened by you leaving. I really am. I've really appreciated your viewpoint and your humor and your passion. And good luck on further ventures in life in Morro Bay.
I think the community is fortunate that most of the discussion between Richard and I is not on the record in these meetings. But I've enjoyed sitting next to you these years. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'll ditto those comments too, Richard. It's been, you know, I've never questioned your sincerity and stuff, so appreciate it. So, community directors, comments?
I think I'm good for this evening.
Okay. So at this point, we'll adjourn to the next regularly scheduled commission meeting on February the 5th. At 6 p.m. here at the Veterans Memorial Building at 209 Surf Street. This is it.